Welcome back, everyone, to the Fantasy Crossover Podcast. I am your host, Danny Duarte, joined by my co-host, Brian Acevedo. And guys, we had probably the most entertaining game of the conference finals in general happen last night. We're recording Monday night. Episode's coming out on Tuesday. But we had it happen on Sunday evening. Game 7, Miami Heat, Boston Celtics. What a thriller. Ultimately, Miami could not get the job done. They fell short to the Celtics. I mean, props to the Celtics. They definitely took this game from Miami. They won 100-96, I believe, was the final score. Four-point game difference. And now, you know, the Celtics are on to play the pending Warriors in San Francisco, game one of the NBA Finals on Thursday. But Brian, what are your general thoughts on game seven? I think that everyone was happy at just how competitive it was, the back and forth action. And it was probably the most, for me at least, the most entertaining game so far in these NBA playoffs.
Yeah, it felt a lot like a throwback a little bit to the kind of older Eastern Conference playoff days. Lower scoring game, obviously, only one team cracked 100. It just came out to be Boston was just a little bit of a better team. It was very close. I think Miami, to their credit, I think they scrapped. They obviously were down most of the game, but even when it was a 10-point lead, it always felt like it was a 2 or 3-point lead. Like Miami was just right there. You could just tell that crowd was ready to go off as soon as they could get a big shot. But to credit Boston, like every time Miami came back, they always had an answer back, either a big Marcus Smart three or a nice Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown pull up. That was a real true team effort. Props to Jason Tatum. Obviously, he got the first Larry Bird Eastern Conference Final MVP. But I will say he got a ton of help from his supporting cast. I mean, that team, top to bottom, guys, the Boston Celtics, they're legit. I counted them out of so many series this playoffs. I finally learned my lesson going into this Celtics Heat game, and that's probably why I predicted that the Celtics would win in either 6 or 7. It's tough. I mean, tough for Miami on their end. I mean, obviously they won game 6, and then to come back, you kind of have game 7 at home. You kind of have that expectation. They went out, Dan. I mean, I know you know this, but I want to reiterate to everybody listening. Miami had picked up 3 players who have won championships over the last 3 years. Obviously, they picked up Kyle Lowry, who won in Toronto. They picked up Markieff Morris, obviously won in 2020, and then PJ Tucker, 2021. So they have been very strategically adding and building specifically to have a championship-built team around Jimmy Butler. They just came up short, man. I think they need a little bit more shot creation, Dan. I think that's what they were really missing, especially in that game 7.
Yeah, props to obviously the Celtics. Controversial statement, but I think you could see where I'm coming from with this. Jimmy Butler should have been the conference MVP. I don't like the notion that you have to reward it to the best player on the winning team. I think it should go to the best player, period. And that was hands down Jimmy Butler. The stats prove it. Everything like lines up with him being the best player in this series, period. In terms of the overall game, props to Boston. They were clearly the more talented team and the deeper team. They had everything clicking for them, and they were able to get stops when they needed to. The two things I definitely want to focus the conversation though on, Brian, apart from the Jimmy Butler MVP segment, would be one, the shot, you know, the 3-point shot heading into that could have potentially won the Heat the game that Jimmy Butler took. People are debating this frantically on Twitter, social media in general, between whether it being a good shot or a bad shot. I want to know your take. I personally thought it was the right shot to take in that situation. Butler had played 47 minutes up until that point, you know, 47 and a half, if we want to get specific. He was tired. I mean, he had just played 46. We know that he has knee inflammation. He just wanted the series to be over with. I'm not mad at it. He had scored a transition 3 earlier in the game. And if you saw, Al Horford was backpedaling, you know, he definitely gave him a space. And what a lot of people don't realize is Butler in transition for 3, he makes 47% of the time his shot. And also, if Butler did drive that shot, I don't think a lot of people realize he was not getting the whistle in the second half. He only took 1 foul shot in the second half compared to 10 in the first half. So I just thought the odds were against him to drive. I like the shot. ultimately. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on MVP for Butler and also the shot?
I disagree with Butler MVP only because of the fact, well, first, they didn't win the series, and there was just no chance that the NBA is going to give the first ever Larry Bird conference final MVP award to a team that's not the Boston Celtics, especially on a night where they won Game 7. But his performances in Games 4 and 5, look, obviously, injury notwithstanding, the performances to me were not good enough, and they obviously ended up putting Miami in a little bit of a hole in the series, and because he didn't deliver. And obviously you can make the argument that obviously Miami demands so much from Jimmy as their best player, and that's rightfully so. But when you want that superstar superstar title, it comes with superstar expectations. And obviously I just think Jason Tatum was a well-deserved MVP. As far as the shot goes, I can't hate him at all for it either. I think he made the right decision. He was absolutely gassed. He played every minute of Game 7. And then obviously you add on the Game 6 performance that he had. I mean, he had done so much to shoulder the load. I don't think Jimmy thought that if that game got to overtime, that Miami could win that game. I don't think he felt like he had the support, and rightfully so. And if you have a chance with 15 seconds to put your team up one in a Game 7 at home, I can't blame you for taking up the shot, despite the fact that it's not your shot. And that's been my issue with Jimmy, Dan. And this is something that I talked about during the regular season to you, is I worry about his perimeter game. I worry about that jump shot being consistent enough. Obviously, look, if this goes in, we're having a completely different discussion. But the point is that it didn't. And I don't fault him, though, for taking the shot, because if he did make it, I mean, you're probably looking at Miami Heat being the Eastern Conference champions. And I mean, he definitely would have gotten the MVP at that point.
Yeah, I don't think anyone can be upset with it. I will say that in terms of his field goal percentage from three in the regular season, it's just definitely misleading. I think people focus on it a little bit too much. But if you watch the games, he doesn't. That's not his forte. He can knock them down. He just chooses not to. But again, I think you and I are aligned. It was the right shot to take, or at least you're okay with the shot being taken. Debatable if you think it was the right shot. I thought it was the right shot, but ultimately I think everyone's aligned. It was a good shot for him and for the Miami Heat to live with.
Yeah.
The other point I want to focus on, Brian, though, is something that is definitely being talked about, rightfully so, the Max Strus three. So in the third quarter, right at the start of the quarter, with around 11 minutes to go, Max Strus made a corner three. About 3 minutes later, at the 8 minute mark, they had the NBA headquarters in New Jersey apparently had like reviewed it offline or something like that, and they basically said that Max Strus had stepped out of bounds as he was taking the shot and took back the 3 points. Brian, I'm one of those people. I align with Coach Spoelstra on this, that shot being counted or uncounted doesn't change the outcome of the game or the result. I mean, clearly Boston should have deserved to win, but I think that the NBA needs to reevaluate that rule and, you know, just live with the decision, the vindication of the choices that the refs make. You cannot go retroactively like 3 minutes in. Like, there should be, you know, at least like a time stamp or time forgiveness for them to review and overturn these calls. I just think that it's too impactful for the flow of the game, especially for one team. And frankly, it doesn't make any logical sense to take away points that late into the period. I want to get your thoughts, because I definitely think that this is a rule change that needs to be applied. If not, like, I'm not saying considered, it needs to be applied, period. That was just egregious, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think there's no question about it being a rule change that needs to happen. It's kind of unfortunate for Miami that they end up having to be the scapegoat in all this, but sometimes you need a mistake to happen for you to know that it's a rule that needs to be fixed or tweaked. And I think the NBA noticed that this was not a good look, especially in a Game 7, and then you have the, you know, history famous Boston Celtics that are known for having a lot of good luck, so to speak. So I definitely agree. I heard what Coach Spoelstra had to say about it, and I think he kind of articulated it pretty well. Just like you said, it didn't affect the end of the game, because I think Miami would have lost regardless of what that call ended up being. But I do agree. I think it's got to be something where it's the next dead ball, you call it right there. It's got to be, if we're going to change points, take points away, change a three to a two or two to a three, like that's got to be a addressed pretty much immediately. You don't want players thinking like, oh, you're taking points away. You know, where do we draw the line? Like, you're going to take a three away from the first quarter and the fourth quarter. You know what I'm saying? Like, they definitely got to set a standard. And I think they will. I think the NBA has been pretty good about this. I think they saw the attention that it was getting, and it's not the good reason, not the right attention they want to be drawing to themselves. So it would not surprise me to see a quick change made about that, Dan.
Yeah, and I think even Celtics fans, like, unanimously, they, like, everyone aligned, like, you know, we're not upset if you call it and it's wrong. We're upset about you changing it that late, even if it favors them. Like, they're just like, where's the flow in this? And you ultimately know that can bite you later on if this doesn't get addressed. So I think everyone in the NBA community is aligned. That's a dumb rule. It needs to be changed. And it's, again, it's unfortunate that the Heat had to be the ones to kind of bear the grunt of this terrible rule.
Yeah, it'll go down as the Max Strus rule, no doubt.
All right, Brian, but let's quickly transition over into, you know, the impending topic for Miami now that their offseason started prematurely for what they wanted. Where do they go from here? What are your thoughts? You and I have had a lot of debate off top, you know, offline discussing this.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple different ways. I think I love Tyler Hero. I think the upside is definitely there, but if you're serious about winning a championship with Jimmy Butler, if you don't feel that Tyler Hero can make an impact on a championship team next year, then I think you have to look at moving him. Obviously, he has 1 year left on his deal before they're pretty much eligible to sign, give him an extension this summer. So we're going to see where Pat Riley's head is at. He's obviously a valuable resource to have on your roster. Then you add Duncan Robinson, obviously overbloated contract. He pretty much sat on the bench most of the playoffs. I think the Heat are going to have to make a tough decision about that one. They seem to have done a pretty good job, though, getting good value back on some bad contracts in the last couple of years. So let's see how they handle it. But if I'm Pat Riley, I'm definitely trying to see if I can package maybe a Hero with a Duncan Robinson, giving up any picks or potentially end of the roster type role players like a Caleb Martin or something like that to bring back that second star. I mean, I've heard a lot of shooting guards mention Zach LaVine, Bradley Beal. Those are a couple guys I think you're going to hear about, but I don't think Bradley Beal is going to leave Washington. I think he wants that money with them that they can offer, and maybe they get a trade happens at some point, but I don't see it happening. I think Zach LaVine, and this is the name that I mentioned to you over text, Dan, I think he's somebody that could definitely be a potential option. I think he fits what Miami needs. I don't know about his defense, and I'm a little concerned with his injuries in the past, but I think Zach LaVine is probably the most realistic, attainable type star that you can get in a deal back for a Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson.
Yeah, so I think we're kind of along the same lines of logic. I disagree with Zach LaVine. I think that, and no disrespect to him, he's made all-star teams. I think that he's basically Tyler Hero, just better. It doesn't address, you know, the key points. I mean, when Hero and Robinson were on the floor, they had to run zone to just cover for their defensive liabilities. I don't know if adding Zach LaVine necessarily changes that scheme for Miami. I do think that the biggest question marks were probably going to be, or are going to be, getting a big that can alleviate some of the defensive pressure that Bam has to deal with on a nightly basis. So PJ Tucker can do that, but obviously he's part of the starting lineup. I would like to see them get a backup big that can just give be a six man and also give Bam Adebayo some rest, maybe even shift him to the power forward if you get like a really good center. Bam's biggest deficiency is his shooting. He can't shoot outside of 15-20 feet, and as the NBA goes, you need a stretch big at this point. It's undeniable. I'm not of the same camp as you that you need to trade Bam, but hey, like, if they package Bam, Hero, and Duncan Robinson for Embiid, I wouldn't be mad. I would take it. But to your point, just to get back to it, Hero, I think the Heat ultimately keep him. We're going to have to wait and see if he is going to make a difference. I worry that he's going to be like James Harden, which, you know, has led to no rings. So that's my biggest concern, but they definitely need to package Duncan Robinson, maybe a couple of some of the players they have under contract. I like Strus, but he's a very team-friendly deal, and he can definitely entice other teams to take on Duncan Robinson's contract. And you get back a bigger player. I think that the Heat need bigs more than they need guards. I like Caleb Martin. I like Gabe Vincent. I like Oladipo. Definitely a priority for them to re-sign. So the Heat are good at the guard position and the, like, you know, small forward position. They just need to focus on the bigs this offseason, in my opinion.
Dan, who's the one player that the Heat could go get realistically this summer to get them to be a title contender next year?
Oh man. I'll be honest. I haven't thought about this that deeply. I know names that were mentioned previously were players such as a Christian Wood. I would love to see a Jeremy Grant type player in Miami. The Ridley contract fits. Maybe you can make it work. That my, like, Miami to me, their focus is on the defensive end and their guards can score. Like, their guards can ultimately score and put the ball in the basket. They just need more help defensively. I mean, you need to alleviate some of the pressure off Bam to get his offense going. And also, you need to alleviate some of the pressure off Jimmy so that he doesn't, you know, tire himself out doing everything. I think that the defense is the biggest thing, even though offense wins games in the regular season, defense wins championships. That's straightforward.
Yeah, Jimmy was carrying, and I definitely don't have questions about Miami's defense. They're obviously top three defense in the league. Their question mark to me, again, is definitely going to just be that offense, and can they get that other additional score that I think they're going to ultimately need if Bam Adebayo can't give this to you consistently?
Yeah, and I think it could be Hero. I mean, again, Hero was dealing with that groin injury. Like, it was tough. It was a hard series to gauge because Hero's a 20-point per night kind of guy, and he just couldn't give it to you this game. Obviously, Lowry was up and down. So, like, it's hard to gauge. I think the offense is there. What worries me is the defense because, let's face it, outside of Bam, we were getting outsized versus Boston very clearly, and it showed. So I think we just need to focus on getting a power forward, center type player that can ultimately kind of be an anchor.
Hey, let's see what they do. You already know Pat's got some tricks up his sleeve, though.
Oh yeah, I if there's one general manager or president of basketball operations you can believe in, it's definitely that guy. He keeps some. It's never a rebuild with Miami. It's a retool. But Brian, let's pivot over to the conference finals champions. We have the Warriors on one side. We have the Celtics on the other. You know, game one tips off on Thursday, June 2nd. What are your thoughts on this series? Who do you have?
First, I think this is going to be an exciting series. I think you have the elite offense of the Golden State Warriors, the ball movement versus the Boston Celtics, who, as we've mentioned, swept Brooklyn, beat the defending champions in six, and then just went to Miami and won a game seven over there. I mean, this defense is battle-tested. They played superstars. You look at the starting fives for these two teams, Dan, and it just, the matchups are just so exciting. You have Marcus Smart and Steph Curry. You got Klay against Jaylen Brown, Tatum and Wiggins. You have Draymond Green and Al Horford. Like, those matchups alone, to me, like, it speaks to how good these starting fives are. Just when you look at those one through four, what you were looking at for Warrior Celtics, I mean, you have Steve Kerr, obviously someone who's a battle-tested coach. You have Udoka, who's obviously like an upstart rookie head coach, coaching in the finals his first year. Just kind of mind-blowing that we're in this position. It kind of feels a lot like experience versus the upstart guys. Obviously, Boston's core has been to the conference finals multiple times, but this is going to be their first time in the finals, all these guys. So I think that that's definitely going to play a factor. It's going to be interesting to see. Golden State had a lot of rest. Obviously, Boston just had game seven in Miami on Sunday. Now it's a quick turnaround, basically 3 days off. I'm sure it'll help. They are relatively healthy, thankfully. I think the break was better for Golden State because they have some guys kind of at the end of the bench that could potentially help. Guys like Otto Porter Jr., guys like Gary Payton, even Andre Iguodala. Like, those are guys that could definitely come back later in the series and make an impact. But if you had to ask me, I'm taking the Warriors in seven. It is so hard to bet against Boston right now because they are just, everyone you think is going to beat them, they beat them. But I do think that Golden State is kind of the standard right now. There's their six finals in 8 years, and I think it's going to ultimately be too much experience, too much ball movement, too much elite shooting, and I think the Warriors win this one in seven, and Steph Curry wins his first finals MVP.
All right, so I definitely, you know, coming into this series, I was of the mindset that whoever won the Eastern Conference Finals would be the NBA champion. The more I think about it, though, the more I am leaning towards experience on on the player side.
As soon as the Heat didn't also win, you're saying that's now you've changed the
No, it's not that, man. I just I thought about it, and what really was eye opening to me was Boston blowing Game 6, and let's be frank, almost blowing Game 7. Like, you know, the Heat to the point we made, they had no offense outside of Jimmy Butler. That's not the case with the Warriors. They will capitalize on Boston's mistakes, and Boston made several mistakes in that Heat series. I think that the Warriors will pounce on it ultimately, and it's just going to be too much to handle. It goes back to that experience, both like in the playoffs and the championship, both in terms of coaching and players. Again, I game 6 and 7 were just eye-opening for me because of that. And because of that, I'm also going to say Warriors in 6. They are just going to be way too much to handle in terms of capitalizing on Boston's youth. Hey, making it to their first finals, but ultimately just not being disciplined enough to handle it.
I think it's going to be interesting to see the Celtics' size advantage over Golden State and how that kind of impacts the series. I mean, outside of Kevon Looney and even Draymond, if you want to consider him a true big, it just doesn't feel like Golden State has a ton of size at those big positions, kind of similar to Miami. And then you got on Boston, you got Horford, you got Grant Williams, Robert Williams. Like, they got a lot of size that they can throw at you. They can even run Tatum at the four, and he's still pretty a big guy. To me, this is not a great matchup for the Warriors, but I do feel like that experience is going to play a factor. And I think you touched on it, them capitalizing on the Celtics' youthful mistakes. Like, Boston, Jaylen Brown cannot be turning the ball over constantly because it's just going to lead out.
Same thing with Tatum, though, right? Yeah, like, Tatum also turns over the ball. And, like, Brian, Tatum was getting shut down by a 6 foot, two guard in Kyle Lowry. Like, that's why the Heat they had defense, but they didn't have the offense. Golden State does. That, to me, is eye-opening, and just that's going to be the difference.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they made too many mistakes. Miami capitalized on it a handful of times.
Yeah.
You know, Golden State's going to capitalize in every time.
Yeah. And quick question before we move on. Would you have picked the Heat to beat the Warriors?
No. Oh. No, because of, like, obviously as a Heat fan, like, I would say yes, but, like, in my head, they're too hobbled, man. I mean, Jimmy Butler at that point, I don't think he would have been able to give you much, especially in the first two games. I don't want to say injuries cost us a series against Boston. You know, it's a part of the game, but you have Jimmy Butler, you have Kyle Lowry still kind of off, you have Hero. It just would have been too much to overcome against a healthy, primed, ready-to-go Golden State team. So either way, again, the series went deep like I expected it to, but I just believe that because of the mistakes and the errors that I saw both teams committing, I think Golden State's just primed to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I can't wait. Hopefully there's not kind of like the Miami Golden State series or the Miami series started. Hopefully there's not a ton of blowouts to start this one, and we're able to just get quality basketball from tip to hopefully a game 6, game 7. But this is going to be an interesting legacy series. I mean, Steph Curry wins a chip here. I mean, legacy's looking pretty good, especially on the year that he broke the NBA 3-point record, you know?
At this point, I am comfortable in saying that Steph Curry is the second best player of this era behind LeBron James.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, KD, but Steph took it.
It's tough. And because Steph has been very consistent, obviously you can't knock his supporting cast. They built that team so well around him, but Steph just does it. And he does it with KD. He did it without KD. And KD, until he's able to prove that he's able to do it without the Golden State Warriors, I just don't think you can hold him to that same level. I think
so. You agree with me? Steph is the second best player in this era. There's no disputing that number one. You and I both agree. Number one's clear cut.
It's a different argument if you're looking at resume versus if I had to take a player from this era. I think KD I can still see the argument for taking KD over Curry for this era. But if you're looking strictly at resume and what they've accomplished, I mean, Steph's in getting in some pretty special company if he wins another chip.
Yeah. No. Well, even if he doesn't.
Yeah. Six finals in eight years. I mean, that does not
happen. This already proved KD made a mistake. Like, making it to the finals without him just proved that, like, it was more about the system than KD.
Yeah. Yeah.
My opinion.
That 100%.
But all right, Brian, let's wrap it up with the following segment. We're talking about, you and I were going on and on about how player rankings in general. I was talking about how Jimmy Butler was the best player in the Eastern Conference Finals, but, you know, people are ranking Tatum ahead of him. And then I told you Jimmy Butler's top 15. I don't think he's top 10. You said a lot of people think he's top 10. You don't. I think it all stemmed from your argument of, you know, Jimmy Butler can't be a superstar if he can't be the best player on a team to win the championship. And we went back and forth. It was this whole debate. But you know, top 10 rankings. Some people have Butler, some people have Tatum, some people have both, some people have none. You know, where do you stand with top 10 rankings? And also your rule for superstardom. Are you willing to concede that it is heavily flawed?
I wouldn't say heavily flawed. That's strong. I mean, I think everyone has, much like you said, everyone has a different top 10. I think everyone also has a different standard for superstar and what you consider that. And I understand that coming off of the last two games that Jimmy Butler just had, it's not the best position to take. But I still have to look at the whole body of work, and I have to understand how Jimmy Butler is being viewed right now versus other, let's be honest, ringless NBA stars, guys like Chris Paul, guys like Damian Lillard, guys like John Morant. Like, how are they viewed in the public's eyes? You know, because certain guys get more hate than others at the same time, man. I think we can both acknowledge that. For me, how I measure my best players, I look at clutchness. I look at their two-way ability to impact offense and defense. And then I look at shot making, leadership, their playmaking, and overall their basketball IQ. And when you,
what does clutchness mean?
Clutchness is a guy who can rely on to get a bucket in the last minute of the game, consistently, reliably. I mean, I'm not going to give you metrics. I don't have the number.
No, I just, you know, some people have a different, clutchness is vague for us.
Yeah, I understand. Someone that's can be counted upon. And I don't mean like a front runner, like someone who's good when you're up 5-6 points, he'll get you to 9 or 10. I'm talking about when you're down 2 or 3 points, who's going to get you the bucket to bring you to a tie game or down one. Those are the types of impact I'm looking for from my best player. But I mean, my list, I got Giannis at number one. I have KD at two, LeBron at three. I know he missed this season, but I still have Kawhi Leonard at four because of a lot of the reasons I mentioned. Five is tough for me, but I have Luka Doncic at number five right now. That's how much I respect his ability. I mean, obviously Golden State obviously respected him quite a bit to the point where they literally changed their whole defense to run a zone just to try to like limit him and contain him a little bit. Number six, I have Steph Curry. And I say this knowing that he, again, might be about to get his fourth ring and all that, but we also have to consider how impressive his supporting cast is in kind of getting to that, to where he's at. Seven, I have Nikola Jokic. Number eight, I have Joel Embiid. Number nine is really tough. I probably have James Harden there at nine. I know he's, you know, had his issues. Oh, I get it. I understand. But there's still no denying he's the only player in the league to average 20 points and 10 assists this year. I mean, that to me counts for something. I know a lot of those are empty buckets, and it brings him down because he has not been able to do it in the playoffs consistently. I definitely have factored that in because he used to be a lot higher. And then number 10 is, to me, it's kind of a tie between Jason Tatum and Damian Lillard. And if Tatum can lead the Celtics to a ring, I mean, I think he belongs in the top 10. So that's kind of where I'm at.
All right. So how heavily do you focus playoffs? Because you're about to put Jason Tatum in the top 10 because of his playoff games, but you put clearly James Harden in your top 10 despite his playoff play. Yeah. So there's a little bit of an inconsistency.
And I understand that. That's why I say that the playoffs are heavily weighed, absolutely, but you also have to factor in the regular season. We can't also ignore it either. And I understand everyone's going to talk about load management and Kawhi, but Kawhi's playoff greatness has been that good to the point where I can overlook him skipping regular season games. I'm just being honest.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to get upset about Kawhi. So I didn't do a top 10 in any particular order. I frankly just, you know, I think that it fluctuates so much. Some days, you know, one player is,
that's true,
you know, number five. Very other days, it's there's seven. But, you know, general top 10, I'd have to go with the following. No particular order. Once again, I have Giannis, Antetokounmpo, LeBron James, Kevin Durant. You know, they definitely belong there. Kawhi Leonard, Steph Curry, top five, and for me, in no particular order. Then I have Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic in there. I also have Luka Doncic in there. So, you know, we have eight there. Number nine and 10 is kind of where it gets really tricky for me. I currently have Chris Paul, given just how he completely impacted winning in Phoenix, even if when he wasn't there. It mattered. And then number 10, it could go any way. Like for me, that's why I told you Jimmy Butler could be top 10, depending, like rounding out the top 10, depending on the day. It could go between Jimmy Butler, Jason Tatum, or Damian Lillard. Like that's how much I respect each of their games. And that's why I say it's so fluid, because depending on the moment in time where you evaluate it, like they all clearly have the attributes and, you know, the criteria to meet that top 10 status at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. And like I said, and no disrespect to Jimmy, I think he's still top 15. I think, honestly, if he makes that three-point shot, Dan, he's probably a top 10 player. Right? Let's call it what it is to me. That's how fluid this stuff can be sometimes. So that's why, you know, we have these rankings and we talk about it. But let's be real. Like, my rankings have changed from beginning of season to end of season. I'm sure yours probably have as well. So these things happen. The one that I was curious about and I wanted to get your thoughts on, Luka and Steph. I know you have Steph ranked above Luka. Is it because of the playoff experience, the championships? Because I'm thinking about it as of right now. And I feel like Luka is so impactful on the game.
I still have Steph above him solely because Luka can impact the game, but does it translate to winning? And that's where I also prioritize, you know, that's why James Harden to me is barely in my top 15, to be quite frank. Like if he is, he would be 15. They don't impact winning at all. And so like Luka obviously impacts winning more than James Harden, but Steph has shown his impact winning is just much greater. That's also why I prioritize, if I had to rank them, Joel Embiid is greater to me than Nikola Jokic, because I've seen him impact his team's winning more than Jokic.
Yeah.
So again, like I prioritize winning a little bit more. So I have Steph over Luka for the time being. And it might stay that way, you know, if they win another ring.
Right. I guess that's why I ask about the supporting cast of how much does that mean to you? Because if we were to, let's play the game of if you remove Steph Curry from the current Golden State Warriors and you input Luka Doncic, you know, I think they get worse. You think they get worse?
I think they get worse. Okay. I mean, Luka needs to learn to, like, you know, I don't want to say be a better teammate, but like he needs to be less of a focal point. Like Steph clearly has shown to be one of the most selfless superstars.
I agree.
So 100%
there, that's a good point.
You know, I prioritize that ultimately. But I think you and I, apart from that egregious James Harden call, are pretty aligned on most of the top 10.
Yeah, and James Harden, guys, like, don't get me wrong, he has a rough.
Bro, he should be 10 for you. Yeah, like, he should be just barely in there.
I originally had him written down as 10, but then I had Damian Lillard at 9. I'm like, do I really feel comfortable having Dame at 9?
You don't have the point guard in there, man.
Yeah. I thought about Chris Paul, but then, I mean, again, the recency bias with losing to Dallas, like that's a tough one right now. But I agree. I think if you look at how the Suns played, I mean, Chris Paul was a top 10 player during the regular season without question.
And, you know, he made the difference in the playoffs for them, in my opinion.
Oh, he did. He's their leader. But
guys, I want to also, just before we wrap up, I want to point out a crazy stat. So by Brian's definition of a superstar being the best player on a championship team, I'm going to list off two names or two players. One of them is a superstar in Brian's eyes. The other one is not. So player A has won a championship. So he is a superstar. And, you know, blind player test, he has accomplished the following. He's an NBA Finals MVP. He has been All-NBA second team once, All-NBA third team three times, and he was all-rookie first team in his, you know, first season. And then the second player is – has been All-NBA first team 4 times, All-NBA second team 5 times, All-NBA third team 2 times, All-NBA first defensive team first team 7 times, All-NBA second team defensive second team 2 times, and he was All-Rookie first team. But he has not won a championship, so he is not a superstar. Brian, do you know who both of these players are?
I don't, but I can't wait to hear who they are.
We're comparing Paul Pierce superstar versus Chris Paul not superstar.
Yeah, well, again, supporting cast has to be considered. How great was Paul Pierce in comparison to, I would argue, their second best player, Kevin Garnett, who I would argue was, it was basically like 1A, 1B on that team. But I get what you're trying to poke at. To me, it's not the best comparison, but I understand where you're
coming from. It's literally the comparison, the argument you give me.
I'm just saying, though, you have to factor in when you're the best player on that team is who's the second best player, who's the third best player. I mean, these are things that you do have to consider. It's not a blanket statement that you have to be the best player. That's what I'm saying.
All right. I'm gonna stop busting your balls.
Yeah, just saying.
All right, guys, but that about wraps it up for this episode. You know, we definitely went a little longer than expected, but these things happen. Be sure to interact with us on social, guys. We're still constantly engaged there. I mean, we have the whole Lakers fiasco still going on. It blows my mind that even though the NBA finals are about to start, ESPN is still talking about LeBron James. It's crazy that, like, he stays relevant when he clearly has nothing to do within, like, NBA discussions right now. But yeah, we're constantly engaged in social media, so be sure to hit us up there. And we'll be dropping probably an episode coming up after a few games of, you know, the NBA finals have been played, just to give you guys our thoughts on how it's going and if we change our predictions at any point in time. Brian, do you have any parting words?
No, sir. Just hoping for some good basketball. Can't wait for this weekend, Thursday and Sunday. Hopefully we get some close games here.
All right, guys. Well, that about wraps it up for us. So until next time, you take it easy.